powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
And what a fun morning so far. Got to listen to some Aaron Goldsmith this morning. Finally hear a ranked segment that sounded good and get some Mariners updates from Jerry DePoto. Look at all that. All that in one morning. How about that, Bump?
Shots fired. Shots fired.
I'm just saying. I agree with Maura every single day of like the ranked that they do on Brock and Salk is just word association. And finally today, they actually made its intent known. Like they carried it out the way it should be. Best ranked segment. In terms of ranking ranked, that one's number one. Fantastic stuff. Great, great morning from Goldie and Brock there. You know, tough stuff to follow, but we will try our best. We're going to have some fun guests today. John Buchegross going to join us to talk Kraken and NHL in an hour after that. We're talking Mariners with Gary Hill of Mariners Radio Network. First, though, I saw a tweet the other day from Micah Parsons, who is a player for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously, and a candidate, by the way, for Defensive Player of the Year. And he retweeted someone just talking about the conference championships and said, I'm paraphrasing, it's interesting that outside of Patrick Mahomes, all of these players are going to be on rookie deals. And people thought that Micah Parsons was subtweeting Dak Prescott, who's obviously his quarterback, which he clarified he was not. But it got people and me debating the right way to build a Super Bowl team because, look, if the Eagles win the Super Bowl or if, I don't know, the Bengals win, I'm going to feel so happy for both teams. They're both really likable teams. But it kind of continues that theme of, like, you can win with a lot of talent and a great quarterback on a rookie deal. If the Chiefs win or if the 49ers win, we're having two very different conversations, Bump. One of which is that you can have a quarterback taking up over 20% of your salary cap. And the other is that maybe you don't need a great quarterback at all. And that's not a shot at Brock Purdy, but I don't know how many people, even 49ers fans, would say Brock Purdy is nearly as good as the other three quarterbacks, or certainly not as accomplished as the other three quarterbacks here. Two very different conversations, which leads me to my question today. Does quarterback need to be the first or last piece of your rebuild? And we'll eventually get to, you know, whether you can actually win when you're paying your quarterback and whether you need that guy. But we'll start there.
First, let me start off by saying that I kind of hope it happens that way. I hope that Pat Mahomes is in the Super Bowl, and I hope that Brock Purdy is in the Super Bowl. So you can have the contrast, right? Different ends of the spectrum. Like, look, there are different ways to do that, because for how long have we heard the numbers tell you that you can't win with a quarterback taking up X amount of dollars on your roster. So I want to see it to make it interesting.
Yes.
Now, to get back to your question, what's the best way to build? I think it depends on your circumstance. If you have an offense that has a bunch of weapons ready to go and you feel that you can carry a football team, then I say, you know what? Because you can have weapons on offense and you don't have a quarterback and you're very limited, right? The final piece is always a quarterback when it comes to an offense. Can he execute what you want to do? If that's the case, then you go ahead and get a quarterback. Now, if you have a transitional quarterback, you have a Geno Smith, you have a quarterback who's in his 30s, 31, 32, 33, and he's good enough, and he's not really necessarily part of the rebuild, he's part of that transition kind of to get you through that, then I think you go elsewhere. Me personally, if I am a GM, I like building outside of the quarterback and then getting the quarterback. Because once you get him, after we've seen all the data and all the years of football, once you get your quarterback, you got a 3 or 4 year window to try to win on that rookie contract, because that's when you have the most success. Now, we got Pat Mahomes right now doing it a different way. He's just that good. He can carry his football team. Me personally, I'm going to build around the quarterback, because you don't want to waste those years, because you're going to get frustrated. Your fan base is going to get frustrated, and they're going to be calling for the next best thing to roll in. So for his sake, for your sake, I think you build around the quarterback, then you get your guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we've seen some other teams do it the other way. Chicago, for instance, saw their guy and they wanted their guy with Justin Fields. They made a trade to take him at, what was he, 10th overall? And I don't think he's the problem in Chicago. I don't know how many people think Justin Fields is the problem in Chicago, but Chicago has a lot of problems. It's the reason they're drafting number one overall this spring. They got to figure out their defense. They got to figure out some weapons. They've frankly, you know, got a piece or two that they can certainly add to protect Justin Fields. So they went quarterback first because they saw their guy, fell in love with their guy, and went to get him. Fine. You still got years of his rookie deal, including a fifth-year option, should you exercise that if you don't want to extend him. But that also puts a window on you in a different kind of way, too, where it's like, okay, well, now we only have 3 or 4 years to get this team together. And sometimes it takes longer than that to build a championship roster. I like the idea of the Seahawks starting this year by building up their defense and by investing in their defense and by getting some other weapons. And Bump, I was looking at the way that some of these Super Bowl teams are constructed, and a lot of them have built that way. And some of them have had weapons, I should say resources and not weapons, resources that Seattle just won't, right? Seattle doesn't have 4 years of being fourth in the NFC West the way that San Francisco did to rack up picks. But Seattle does have 4 picks in the first 2 rounds. You can do a lot of damage, right? In a good way, to build up your team that way. If they see a quarterback, if they fall in love with CJ Stroud, if they fall in love with Bryce Young and want to trade up and you know, try to get him, fine. I think that looking at these four teams, a lot of them added some really important pieces before they got their quarterback, and I just think that that feels like a more sustainable way to do it. Even the Bengals, it feels like because they added Ja'Marr Chase and made some big free agency moves after going to get Joe Burrow, it feels like they added after, but they didn't. Like, they added some key pieces. Their wide receiver number 3, Boyd, Joe Mixon, one of their starting safeties, a starting defensive end, Sam Hubbard. They added all those guys before they even got to the 2019 draft. So I think that one pattern you're seeing with these teams is being able to build the foundation before you get your quarterback. Whether or not you can win when you're paying that quarterback is something that's going to be put to the test when Kansas City goes out there, right?
Right. I look at this Seahawks situation and I say, okay, put a rookie quarterback in here. Put Bryce Young on this team right now. There's a learning curve that has to happen. It's rare that a quarterback enters the league and from snap number one, he's good to go. Yeah. You know where you see that happen? At running back, at receiver, at linebacker, at DN, at safety. Like, those are the positions where you can go out and there's more room for error. I can be a receiver in the huddle and be like, hey, man, what do I do on this play? Tell me exactly what to do. I got a post. I see a 2-eye safety. I'm going to split those guys. I can be a linebacker. Talk to my Will. Hey, man, or my Mike. What are we doing here? How do we adjust? We're communicating. When you're the quarterback, you are the leader. You're in charge of making sure everybody is on the right page. You are sliding protection. You're making adjustments at the line of scrimmage. You're switching into plays. You're reading your hots. You're throwing the QB when you get receivers when you get pressure off the edge. Because you ask so much of that guy, it's hard for him to come in and just be ready to go. There's some smart football players, especially at the quarterback position in this league. But when things start happening fast, now, this is my example of the NFL happening fast for me, and I'm a receiver, okay? I'm running down the slot, and Lofa Tatupu is one step behind me. His big butt should not be that close to me. I've never had a linebacker be on me like this. I'm like, what's going on here? They're just bigger, faster, stronger. So now imagine being a quarterback and having to process all that. Some guys can do it, but for the most part, there's a learning curve going on there. So how do you protect that young man? How do you make sure that when it's his time to shine, he has all the resources necessary, is that you build around him? I think now we're going to start seeing that transition quarterbacks are going to have that much more value. That is exactly why I look at Geno Smith and I say he has so much value for this team right now, because it's his job to make sure that when the Hawks do get all these pieces around, that they're moving in the right direction, and there's time for the next guy to learn all the things that Geno learned in 8-9 years sitting on the bench. Do that in like 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, I look at the Cincinnati Bengals and how they're doing it, and I go, yeah, that's a formula for success. I look at the 49ers and how they did it. I don't want to lose a bunch of games, but you look at all the talent they have around. All right, that's a formula for success. Pat Mahomes is just an alien, and he does things that no one else can do. You throw him in there, he'll make some plays. So I'm definitely on the team of, you get guys around him. You support him offensively, defensively, special teams-wise, so that when he does make those mistakes, there's talent around him to pick up the slack.
Is there even a quarterback you would, as a fan, as someone covering this team, as a critic, fall in love with in this draft? Like, I don't even know that there's someone that they could have a shot at where you'd think, even young, man, that you'd think, like, you are missing out on your Patrick Mahomes by not taking this guy.
He goes to USC and he'll be eligible next year.
That's what I'm saying.
That's the quarterback. I think you and I feel the same about it. Caleb Williams is something special. Now, these dudes can play. Bryce Young might have a great career in the NFL. CJ might have a great year in their career in the NFL. But there's no guy where I'm like, you have to have this guy. And then we got Will Levis. Am I saying his name right? Will Levis. We got him there. And I see the talent in that dude. But he's not I have to have him at number five type of guy.
Yeah.
At least not for me. But I'm not calling the plays. I'm not looking for a certain type of guy. I'm not Shane Waldron or Pete Carroll. But there's no one in this draft, at least offensively at the quarterback spot, that I need to have right now.
Let's get back to that Micah Parsons tweet. So again, he said, besides Mahomes, this was in response. I should have made this clear earlier. Brandon Bean is the GM for the Bills. And yesterday I read you guys a quote that he said about how the Bengals have built compared to how the Bills have built. And he said, look, I don't want to suck bad enough to get Ja'Marr Chase. Okay, so that's the quote. We talked about it yesterday. That's what Micah Parsons is responding to. So here's the Micah Parsons tweet that I mentioned. Besides Mahomes, every team in the Final Four quarterback is on a rookie deal and surrounded by talent. Interesting take. Micah, what are you talking about? Tell us more. I need to know. But let's get to the second part of this question, Bump. Let's say you find that quarterback. Let's say you get him, you fall in love with him, and that you do have some other pieces. Let's say the Seahawks in 3 years are just a better team than they are now defensively and even offensively. Let's say that they continue to add weapons. I wonder if San Francisco winning will make people think that you can get away with not having that guy. And again, I think that there are people that are going to be like, you're discounting Brock Purdy. I'm not, but Brock Purdy is the final pick of a draft. There was close to zero investment in originally selecting Brock Purdy compared to selecting Patrick Mahomes at 10, Joe Burrow at 1, and even Jalen Hurts as a second round pick, right?
Right. Brock Purdy is throwing a wrench in the system. He's messing things up right now. And there's a reason why Purdy was picked last in this draft. I'm not saying that the experts get it right all the time, but for the most part, they evaluate thousands of players every single year. You have GMs, you have scouting departments. There was something about Brock Purdy that made what 32 executives be like, nah, I'm good. Or at least 31
many
of them
times.
Be like, nah, I'm good. Yeah, many
six
times.
Six or seven
right?
times.
Six times. Like, still on the board? Nah, I'm good. Still on the board? Nah, I'm good. And sometimes they get it wrong. But when you look at Brock Purdy, you have to look at Debo. You got to look at McCaffrey. You have to look at Ayuk. You got to look at Trent Williams. You got to look at Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, Greenlaw, Hufanga, Ward. But it's not just him. And that's what I love about football. It's the complete team sport, Stacey. I've never seen one man take a game over. I've seen quarterbacks have great performances. All he threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. But that O-line was blocking. Those receivers were catching.
Yeah.
Those running backs were running. It just doesn't work that way. So Brock Purdy, I'm happy for him, but he's messing up the matrix right now. People are like, what's going on? This ain't supposed to happen. He's Mr. Relevant last pick, but it's because of what he has around him. So and because he's Mr. Relevant, if he does go forward as the quarterback for the 49ers, they're going to have some money to play with, which makes him that much more scary. So you look at that situation and you say, why can't we just do it like that? Yeah, you can do it like that. You can do it with a third string quarterback, a guy who's not projected to do much, but you have to support him.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you support him? With personnel and with a guy like Shanahan who knows what the heck he's doing calling plays.
940, did we not have this conversation when Nick Foles was a quarterback? I mean, yeah, Nick Foles also led a Super Bowl team to a win through five games?
It was a handful of games at the end of the regular season.
Yeah, Carson
and
Wentz was hurt in the regular
playoff
season.
Games.
Was it like week 12 or 13?
It was like week
maybe later
14
than that.
Or 15, yeah.
It's a bit of a different conversation talking about, hey, Nick Foles helped you out. They had a great backup quarterback situation. Can he keep them going? And by the way, at the time, Carson Wentz was in the MVP conversation.
Well, and everybody
so
knew that
did not
Wentz
think
was
Carson
coming
Wentz
back
was
the
washed.
Next year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No one was thinking like, I mean, maybe they were. I don't remember how many conversations were like, they should roll with Foles instead of Wentz when Wentz played really well and people did really think he was great at the time. this is more of, I think there are people saying if Purdy can do this, anyone can do this. And I don't agree, but I think that it's making the conversation really interesting. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Either you know, there's one of four paths here. But in one of them, you win with the final pick of the draft. And in the other, you win paying your quarterback more than 20% of the cap. Interesting angles here. All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, goals galore at Climate Pledge last night. The Kraken blow out the Canucks 6-1. Here is the sixth goal of the night. This one from Ryan Donato.
In the gap is Geeky with McCann. In front, Donato scores! Wow! Ryan Donato maintains that torrid stick. What a shot off his backhand. 6-1, Seattle.
Seattle's first win over Vancouver in 7 tries. What's the real headline?
It's that classic saying, if at first you don't succeed, try 6 more times. Everyone knows that. That's the go-to.
I've heard that one before.
Yeah.
That's what I tell my kids. But dust yourself off and try again. Exactly. Rest in peace, Aaliyah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I learned a hockey phrase last night, and I'm excited to say it. You know what it is? It was a saucy pass out there. So I hit up my hockey buddy. I go, saucy, man. How do I use that in a sentence? Like, what does that mean? And he goes, it's when you pass the puck and it elevates over, you know, the opposing player's stick and it gets your guy. That's a saucy pass. And we saw one of those last night. I believe it was one of McCain's goal or whatnot. A saucy pass to start that thing. I'm like, I cannot wait to use this on air tomorrow. All starts with sauciness, baby. Saucy pass. Let's go.
How about Tyler Myers' cheap shot of Matty Beniers?
Tyler Myers in his neck.
That was garbage.
We have no choice but to fight Tyler Myers. Like, we all know that, right? Like, we have no choice but to do this. No, I'm not taking on Tyler
You hope
Myers.
Maddie didn't
Six
have...
6'8", absolutely not.
You hope it wasn't like a concussion or anything. He just got his bell rung a little bit. He'll be back out there, hopefully.
Hopefully.
That's the thing about NHL injury reports. They don't tell you anything. They tell you either upper body or lower body. That's all you know. You will not know anything else besides that. But that was some garbage from Tyler Myers of the Canucks.
Yeah, that's all that.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Patrick Mahomes says he is ready to go for the AFC Championship game. What's the real headline?
If nothing else, it's just to get him out of the house and away from his family. You know what? For the longest time last year, I used to defend...
You used to stick up for Jackson and Brittany.
Well, because it's not that I didn't think that they were objectively kind of annoying in the way that I think everyone in their 20s is annoying, like anyone on TikTok. Just kidding, I love TikTok. But it's that I felt that the criticism or tweets about Jackson Mahomes were laced with homophobia, even though I don't think that he is like... I don't think that he has at any point said that he identifies as gay. Either way, it was just like they were pretty homophobic tweets about him. And the stuff with Brittany was laced with what I thought was really mean shots and like saying like, you're too ugly to be married to Patrick Mahomes. And like, okay, she can be annoying, but like, what's up with all of this? Like, so she can't be like loud. It just, the criticism of them, even though I both thought they were kind of annoying, got under my skin because it was laced with stuff that had nothing to do with like, you don't agree with them or you think they're annoying. And it was instead really cruel. And I have noticed though, you haven't heard a lot from either of them.
They're both really quiet this year.
Both really quiet this year. I think Patrick Mahomes might have sat down with them and been like, guys, listen, we're getting a lot of flack as a family
unit. I love you, but...
We got to reel it back. We got to reel it back in.
Nah, he definitely sat down with him and said, look, I'm on a mission this year. And then as far as wifey and brother goes, man, we all have family members who
all
do a little bit too much. We all have it. And as far as his wifey goes, say what you want about her. But he's with her for a very long time, and there's a reason why he chose to marry that woman. He loves her, and he trusts her. So, might not be your cup of tea. It's not my cup of tea, but I ain't got to drink that cup of tea. That's all Pat Mahomes. And he's still balling.
She is ride or die. Yeah. Like, she tweets about him all the time, goes to every game. Just say you don't like her because she's kind of like... loud, which there's nothing wrong with that.
She's that drunk lady in Germany I met one time.
It is what it is.
You know, it's all good. Have fun.
Yeah. Do you?
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Jets have officially hired Nathaniel Hackett to be their next offensive coordinator. What's the real headline?
It's great news for New York because the last time a team hired Hackett to lure Aaron Rodgers away, it worked out so well. It did not work. It did not work out well.
Ended up with Russell Wilson, and we see how that went. But here's the thing. His, what, three seasons with Nathaniel Hackett as his coordinator, went to three Pro Bowls, was All-Pro twice, had a year where he completed 70% of his passes, 48 touchdowns, back-to-back MVPs, but he had Adams over there throwing the football, too. So there's still some type of connection. You need some talent. I'm sure Aaron Rodgers and Nathaniel Hackett are having a conversation, but the likeliness of that going down. But you look at the weapons they have over there, man. You got a receiver. You got a running back. Breece Hall, if he comes back, you have a defense that's played well. I could understand the attraction to New York. But I wonder what Green Bay is going to do to try to keep him.
Colin Coward tweeted out a Photoshop picture of Aaron Rodgers in a Jets uniform. And look, this is going to be mean. Jets fans, cover your ears. He said he honestly looks less talented in this jersey. And you know what? I agreed.
I saw
him in it. There was something about seeing him in the Jets jersey where I thought, you're right. He could just be Mike White. Like, he legitimately looks less talented in this jersey. I don't know what it is. Man, I'm sorry, Jets. They're a really likable franchise. I just want the best for them. All right, well, we also want the best for the Seahawks, and the Seahawks have a couple different avenues that they can choose to improve. The draft, free agency, trade. Let's talk about quick fixes versus long-term investments. Which positions should the Seahawks draft, and which should they address in free agency? That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
What do you address in free agency and what do you address in the draft? That's the question the Seahawks are going to be facing. The salary cap in 2023 is projected to be between $220 and $225 million. Obviously, the Seahawks do not have $220 million to spend. They already have a good chunk of that invested in current players, but they do have the seventh most cap space available right now of all teams in the league. Again, that is not including every single player, but neither does it for all of those other teams. So that's what we're looking at. I'll tell you guys the top free agents that are out here, and then Bump, I'll have you tell us either which positions specifically you think they should address in free agency or the draft, or which specific players you think they should go after and why. So first, I'll let you guys know that these free agent rankings are from Pro Football Focus, and the number two free agent on these rankings, a player that played for you last year, Geno Smith. I do want to read this section. Nothing about what he's doing is fluky or excessively bolstered by things like play action, an outlier performance, and unstable metrics, or any other method you use to try to poke holes in his production. His 79.8 overall grade and 87.6 grade from a clean pocket ranked 9th and 12th respectively. His 14 passing touchdowns on throws of 20-plus yards were two more than the next best quarterback, and his 5.6 big-time throw percentage ranked 5th. So that is going to be one of the more expensive free agents, even at $30 million, which isn't incredibly expensive for a quarterback, but obviously $30 million, you'd be the highest-paid player on the team for that year. But a couple other guys on here, you've got Javon Hargrave from the Philadelphia Eagles, a defensive lineman. Safety Jesse Bates, though I don't know that the Seahawks need safety help. Cornerback Jamal Dean from Tampa Bay. Don't know that they need cornerback help, but could be a place to look. And then you got some linebackers in here with Lavonte David coming out of Tampa Bay. A couple other guys, David Long out of Tennessee. So I guess we'll start maybe their Bump with defense. We know they need to improve. Is there a position on defense that they should maybe look at free agency to instead of the draft, or vice versa?
No. I think that everything needs to be addressed, whether it's free agency and the draft, defensive line and linebackers. Now, there's some linebackers out there. Obviously, I mean, I was surprised with the market value for Lavonte David, but then I realized he's 33 years old, and I'm like, okay. I think they have him listed as a value at like $9.5 million per year. Then I start looking on the cheap. Like, all right, who's a name that's out there? Probably didn't have the greatest season, but can come here and fill a void. That's what the Seahawks do, right? They pick up guys and give them their second chance at life in the NFL. I look at a guy like Devin Bush, who's 24 years old, kind of disappeared over there in Pittsburgh, didn't have the greatest year, but I'm like, maybe that's a guy who can come in here and help. But Then I look at the defensive line. There's so many places you can go, right? In a perfect world, you want Fletcher Cox, guy out of Philadelphia. He's going to get it done, but he will cost you about $14 million. Are you willing to pay $14 million for a 33-year-old, but you know that he can ball? Then I go on the cheap side. What about Greg Gaines over there in L.A., the Los Angeles Rams? He's
big
only
fan.
Got, he, yeah, he's going to, he's going to ask for about $7 million per year. So what I'm looking for, and I think what a lot of people look for, they want to hear names that they recognize. Yeah, because a lot of people aren't watching film on these dudes the way that myself and my colleagues do. So you don't really know what he can do, but you you know that's a familiar name, and you realize that they're able to make plays out there. So I think in free agency and in the draft, you got to go heavy defense, extremely heavy defense. That should be your priority. If there is a veteran linebacker out there that you're able to seduce over here to Seattle, you go ahead and do it. So now it's not it's still a priority during the draft, but it's not as urgent in the draft. You know what I'm saying? What is urgent will always be urgent are defensive linemen. Whether you pick up one during free agency, all right, or whether you go into the draft, that has to be a focus because that helps the second level and it helps the third level. So everything's on the table for me. I'm not singling out one position. I'm not saying if they do this, do that. I'm saying you go get the best defensive players out there and help this defense.
Tell me if I'm wrong about this. I feel like my gut instinct is to not only look for the best talent available, but also to think about what's going to really cost me. Now, a rookie deal for any position is going to be comparatively less than it would for a veteran player, so I'm not as concerned there. But a veteran deal for a really good defensive end or outside linebacker is going to be one of the most expensive positions on my roster. So I just have this like gut instinct to try to address that in the draft. What do you think about the approach of trying to get players who will eventually be more expensive in the draft, especially if you see talent you like?
Players that will be more expensive in the draft. Here's my, when I'm looking at the DN position for, or the outside back, whatever, the rusher, whatever you want to call it in this 3-4, right? Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Daryl Taylor and I'm looking at Chinna Nwosu. The question you have to ask yourself, are these guys, can they duplicate what they did last year and get better off of what they did last year? I look at Daryl Taylor and I go, towards the end of the year, he started to figure out, and the Seahawks started to figure out how to set him up for success. Clear passing downs, third and long. This is when you let him go. And Chinna Nwosu can be your every down type of dude, and then you bring in Bruce Irvin. So I look at that position right now and I say, they need backup, but it's not as dire as it is for me when it comes to interior linemen. I'm banking on them. Now, I could be wrong, right? Projections, you're never 100% with projections. I could be wrong, but I think they might have tapped into something when it comes to these guys. Now you need some young talent behind them, some guys that you can develop. You still got Boye Mafe over there. He could develop into something good. But I look at that position and I go, I'm not as desperate at that position that I am for the middle of the field, the interior lineman and your Mike and Will linebackers. I don't know if that answered your question or not.
No, it does.
That's
does.
Where I went.
Well, it's either way. It still answers the question of like where they need to address in free agency versus elsewhere. And really important to point out, Bump, and I'm glad you did, that late season injuries also affect the need at certain positions, and you may not want to use all your draft picks on linebackers, even though you suddenly may need to enter with two new interior linebackers, right? Like right. You may not have expected you would need to find two guys. So now it's a little more tempting to be like, okay, well, what if for maybe one of these positions we go free agency? Or what if for maybe one of these positions we get a quick fix with an older veteran that may not be here long term, but we weren't really counting on replacing Cody Barton and Jordan Brooks to start the season. So I think you're right about people seeing names they recognize and saying, like, what about this guy? Like, I'm already seeing on the Mac and Jack's text line, Greg Gaines is too short for a 3-4. What about Ndamukong Suh? Ndamukong Suh is going to be 37?
I'm good
36.
On him. I'm good.
Had
we
one
don't,
sack this
we
year.
Don't wanna do that. We don't want to do that.
Like, I just, I've this team needs to get younger, and not young for the sake of getting young. Like, honestly, Bruce Irvin came here and performed better than some of the defensive players you already had at 35 years old. But you need to get younger for the sake of building up a sustainability over the next couple of years, right? Like,
right.
We know how hard it is to go years without tapping into young talent. That's what the Seahawks did for a while. They went years without drafting all pros, without drafting Pro Bowlers. And you saw the consequence of that, which is all of a sudden you've got like you're really top heavy, five players are really good, and then you don't have depth elsewhere.
Right. And I think when it comes to depth too, I think DT and Uchenna allows you to create depth there because you have guys, right? When you have positions where you have guys, now you're drafting for depth. In the middle, we don't have guys right now. We got an older Al Woods, Monet's out, Puna Ford struggle a little bit. And then I see the name Deron Payne being thrown out there. He's going to ask for $19 million plus. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to pay him $19 million plus? I am. I'm looking for the best guys out there. All right. So I look at Deron Payne and I go, yeah, why not? Why not take a look at that guy? Because you know why? Because you have no depth there. So where do you start in a position where you don't have depth? You go and get a dude. You go and get a dude, and he would be a dude right there. So especially at the linebacker spot, I'll take a shot at Levante David because we need a dude there. Jordan Brooks is out.
Yep.
Cody Barnes is good off the bench. We're not sure what Tanner Muse can do. He was a safety in college. He's still learning the position, even though he was drafted by the Raiders and got some reps there. If you don't have a dude, you can't work on depth. There's only a few positions where you can work on depth on this team in my opinion. At the corner spot, at the safety spot, and at the end spot. You can still get a dude at the end spot, but you have bodies there that are serviceable right now.
Yeah.
Offensively, where do you need a dude? Interior offensive lineman. Everyone else, now you're working for depth. So I encourage people to look at it like that. Unless you can look at that position and say, he is a guy, you're working for depth. If you don't have a guy there, go spend some money and get a dude.
All right. ESPN's John Buchagross is going to join us in less than 20 minutes, to talk about the Seattle Kraken, their shot at the playoffs, what they've improved on this year, and we'll take a look around the rest of the NHL as well. Before we get to it, we've got a theory about Kellen Moore. Why do we fall in love with some offensive coordinators, overlook others, and what's a big mistake we make when we talk about offense and offensive game planning in general? It's a big question, but it's a really fascinating conversation. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
There's a really interesting conversation happening right now about offensive coordinators, Bump, and I think it's heavily influenced by Sean McVay specifically. Sean McVay was not recently hired. He's been with the Rams since, 2017, I want to say, when he became a 32-year-old head coach. And then what you've seen in the years following that is this idea of these young boy wonder offensive minds. And in some cases that's worked out. I mean, Zach Taylor, who's from that tree, has been wonderful with Cincinnati. Obviously Kyle Shanahan, who was at Washington, clearly under Mike Shanahan, but at Washington with Sean McVay, went to San Francisco. He's been phenomenal and a great offensive mind there. In other cases, it hasn't worked. The Arizona Cardinals tried their hand hiring Cliff Kingsbury, and that has not worked out for them. He may have been a great offensive mind, but could not make the most of their number one overall pick and also could not really build a culture. The recent conversation that people are having concerns Kellen Moore, offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys have been great offensively for 2 years. These stats are a little warped because there have been times when they've lost Dak Prescott, sometimes for extended periods of time, other times for one or two games. But they've been better this year in third down conversions, 45% there. Red zone touchdowns, 71%. Rushing yards, rushing touchdowns, losing less fumbles. Haven't had as many passing yards or passing touchdowns, but still a good season from Dallas, a good season from Dak. Not tops in the league, but they were one of the better offenses. So Kellen Moore is this other kind of version of this boy wonder, a former quarterback who people are kind of falling in love with. And I wanted to have a conversation about what makes a good offensive coordinator, not only what you think of Kellen Moore, but if there are, in general, for the average fan like me, who has never coached or played, if there are some assumptions we make about offenses and offensive game planning and coordinators that are just wrong. So first, not to put Kellen Moore on the spot, but what do you think about Kellen Moore? Because he's a favorite for a couple head coaching jobs right now.
Yeah, and Kellen Moore has been in the league for a while. He's been a coordinator for 3 years for the Dallas Cowboys. 2020, they were ranked 14th overall. 2021 was his year. First overall, second in passing, ninth running the rock. 2022, this year, they're 11th overall, 14th passing, ninth running the rock. Kellen Moore knows football. Guy was a starter over there at Boise State. There's a reason why McCarthy kept him around. I believe he was part of the Jason Garrett coaching tree over there. You keep him around for a reason. He's a quarterback. Quarterbacks get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to calling plays, no matter what level of football you're playing at. Even in media game, quarterback comes on the show and starts talking. People drop everything they're doing and say, he's a quarterback. He must know what he's doing. Granted, quarterbacks have a lot of responsibility. They should know what they're doing as far as all these positions. I look at Kellen Moore, and I've watched a lot of Dallas Cowboy football games, and he's called some solid games. But when I think of wonder offensive coordinators and guys who are innovative, those are the guys that run a play and make me go, dang, I've never seen that one before. I think I like that. There are only so many things you can do in the run game, right? There's about five runs. There's your inside zone, outside zone, your counter, your power, your trap, maybe your delay. There's only so many runs you can do, but you got to dress it up to make it look like other things. That's one thing I look at when it comes to coordinators. How do you dress up your runs to make it look like something that the defense isn't expecting? I look at the Dallas Cowboys offense and I go, the dressing isn't there all the time, but I kind of see what they're doing. Kellen Moore is the offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys and was part of Dak Prescott's one of his best years as a professional. So he's going to get the benefit of the doubt. But I look at guys like Bienemy and I'm like, this dude's been doing it for a long time. And why hasn't he got the call? He's an older dude, right? He's with Andy Reid. There's some other factors into this thing, but I'm not going to go there.
You can't right go there now. Saying that he's black.
Nah, I don't need to say it. People know what I'm talking about. I don't need to say it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll say it.
You'll say it for me?
I'll say it.
He's an older dude. So I look at the way people fall in love with the youth, and I get it because this is a young man's game. You have to be able to connect with these young men. There's 24. You're depending on 24, 25, 26-year-olds out there to win ball games for you and to make some money. So they fall in love with this youth. And there's nothing wrong with youth.
No.
But I've been married 13 years. When I have issues, am I going to the homie that's my age who's been married about 6-7 years? Nah, I'm going to Paul Moyer. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to my Uncle Dwayne. Guy's been married for 20-something plus years because I go, they know some things that I don't. No matter how much this world has changed, no matter how much things are different, they know some things that these younger guys don't. That's how I look at coordinators. I go, you are innovative. You know a lot about football. You're changing the game. But some things remain the same, and that's running that football. Run the football will never change. You have to be able to run the football and do those sorts of things. So it's not a knock on Kellen Moore, but he is in the perfect position. He's a quarterback for the he was a quarterback. He's a coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott had a hell of a year 1 year. So now he's going to be the hottest thing on the market because of his birth date is not in the 70s and 60s.
Well, yeah, and that, and you can say, oh, we can basically make this guy a carbon copy of Sean McVay. It's like who is most like Sean McVay contest. And it's not to take away from what Sean McVay is doing. Sean McVay is brilliant, right? I don't know many people who can look at the sustained success he's had there, getting to a Super Bowl, winning another Super Bowl, and say, I don't know that he's got it. He's a young guy that hasn't figured it out. No, Sean McVay is clearly obsessed with football, knows football, and was able to energize his team and get all these big personalities together. Like, it's good coaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that the secret to him doing that is that he was 33 years old.
No.
Like, that wasn't him being able to tap into players because he's younger. Do I think that it is good that as a league, the NFL finds new and innovative ways to do things, that it challenges itself in some of the assumptions that it makes about people, like that young coaches, won't understand certain things? Yeah, it's good to challenge yourself. But I think what happens is sometimes you go so far in the other direction where all of a sudden it becomes like exclusively these young coordinators are the future. And instead we're going to overlook coaches that don't look like or seem like this person.
Yeah. Look at the guys, the coaches or the coordinators who are in the championship game. Kyle Shanahan, he's a younger coach. I would say he's in his late 30s, early 40s possibly.
Shanahan, I think he's like 44.
Yeah.
And maybe that's Kingsbury. Either way.
And he's been in the game since, I mean, he could walk. You know what
right.
I mean? This guy is built for this. He's been groomed for this. And you can tell in his play calling. Look at Andy Reid and Bienemy. These guys have been around for a very long time. So there's something to be said about the older guys. Let's not forget these older guys. They're the guys who have been in these battles, who've been in the trenches with these dudes, who have been able to evolve with the game. I'm not hating on young dudes, and I I hope Kellen Moore gets everything that he deserves, because I know he knows the game. This guy's no dummy. You don't become an OC on accident. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, let's not just crown guys as geniuses because they're 30-something years old and that offense is working. What happened in Arizona? That man's out the league.
Yep. Yep. Couldn't build a culture. All right. John Buchagross is going to join us. We're going to get to some more X's and O's with Bump. All that coming your way next. Don't go anywhere.